Ramsey TV.
Ladies and gentlemen, today, just hours ago, in a Broward County, Florida courtroom, Broward County, the most controversial county in the United States, practically. Always weird things happening in Broward County. In the courtroom today, in front of the judge, the attorneys, the defendant, and about 30-member jury pool, I, your beloved host, Martin Zender, the world's most outspoken Bible scholar, gave a short talk on the absolute and the relative perspective. Not even kidding, how could you make this up? From the edge of the bottom of the Floridan Peninsula, from Broward County, this is Martin Zender, my day in court. Oh my goodness, it was a very stressful day. I've never done jury duty. Okay, so they get us down in the jury room downstairs at about 9:15. They give us the lowdown. There's probably 200 people there. And they maybe have two or three cases. I don't know what they have. But anyway, at the first call, my number comes up. So I go up there. I'm in the courtroom with 40 people. As I said, the judge, two attorneys on either side, the defense, the prosecution, the court recorder, of course. And, of course, what they're trying to do here, the lawyers are trying to figure out who they want for the jury. We go up there, and now they are going to grill us. The attorneys are going to grill us to find out our suitability as jurors. A question came up. Do you believe in coincidences? This was the defense. Because apparently, I think I can talk about this case because I'm not on the jury. It's a case from 2014. This guy broke into a house and stole stuff. Count number one. Count number two, he gave a false name at the scene. Allegedly. So the question was, do you believe in coincidences? And the defense attorney went around the room. By this time, the pool had been whittled down to about 30. 10 people got eliminated for various reasons. I couldn't even hear what was going on because they had us split into two sections, perpendicular. One section was here, one section was over here. So most of the time, the attorney was looking at the other section, talking to them. I could barely hear him. What I was shocked about was just nobody talks loud. Nobody makes pronouncements. I mean, I've seen some court dramas on television. It's not my favorite thing to watch, but you see them pacing back and forth. It's like, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you exude. These people, everybody there was a mouse. It's like, nobody brought it up from the diaphragm. I don't know what was going on there. Like the jurors, when they were answering questions, you couldn't even hear them. Plus, some of them had masks on. I thought, well, surely when the lawyers get up here, they're going to be bellowing. No. What's wrong with culture? This is a cultural problem, I think. We're afraid to talk, to be loud, to be heard. It seems to me, I'm getting a little off track. I'm going to get back to my teaching the absolute and the relative in a courtroom today. But I would think that one of the qualifications, I was really thinking about this during the lunch break, one of the qualifications to be an evangelist would be to be heard. Faith comes by hearing. Faith comes by hearing. You look at these people in the old days, back in the days where there was lots of stage plays and people performed in theaters, and you had to make your voice reach to the back row. Jesus, do you think he was up there saying, "Blessed are the meek, but they shall inherit"? No. Blessed are the meek. Oh, it was great. I'm sure it was great. No sound system. No Vox speakers. You had to reach the back row. Nobody. It was just like, it was driving me a little bit crazy. So anyway, the question was, do you believe in coincidences? Because apparently, this lady's client is dependent on the fact that you do believe in coincidences, and that it was probably just a coincidence that he happened to be here at this time with this or that in his hand. I don't know. Do you believe in coincidences? I couldn't hear what other jurors were saying. But when it came to me, I bellowed my answer. And I said, I quote, "Well, that's a tricky question for me." All eyes. "Because, you see, I believe that God controls everything that happens on this planet. He planned everything ahead of time. So, absolutely speaking, no, I don't believe there's any such thing as a coincidence." Dead silence. Even when these people are talking, it's practically dead silence. But I said, "But I realize that's not helpful in a situation like this. So, relatively, yes, of course, there are coincidences." You say, "What difference does that make?" The lady just nodded, you know, the attorney just like, okay, that's interesting. Next. "But I was in the bathroom during a break later, and this nice kid, tall guy, he was reading Brave New World. I said, oh, that's a good book. And he said, I know, I heard you say you're a writer. I didn't tell you this, but the prosecution, they had read my form that I filled out and said, oh, you're a writer. Yes, I am. I thought the prosecution was going to ask me what I wrote, in which case I was loaded for bear, but the question wasn't asked. But this young man did ask me. And I said, well, I wrote a book called How to Quit Church Without Quitting God. And he was intrigued. He does go to church. And he knew I was not too keen on church. And he said, well, my church, you know, we feed the poor, we do good works. I said, well, that's great. I mean, that's a good thing. But a lot of other organizations do that too. One of the things you expect from an assembly gathered for the purpose of knowing God is the teaching. And I said, the churches teach horrendous things, such as that God is a tyrant waiting for you to make a mistake, at which time he will damn you for eternity. The kid's eyes lit up. He was interested. He said, I'm going to look into your stuff. I said, I remember somebody made me some cards. I think it was Dean and Amy Wilkinson. They made me some cards. I hardly ever pass them out, but I thought maybe I have one in my wallet. I looked. I did. Gave it to the kid. He might be watching this show. I don't know. What a day. What a day. That courtroom was so sterile. They had no fans in there. It was dead quiet. It was horrible. Horrible for years, truly. Because you know how much I love the fans. But I will tell you now that the jury pool got whittled down to 18 people. For various reasons. People had excuses. This. They didn't speak good English. I get it. Yeah. They're too emotional. Okay, yeah. They don't talk loud enough. Everybody shouldn't have been dismissed for that. Except for me and the guy next to me. He was good. He was good. So, yeah, the courtroom. Little tiny window. I had some PTSD going on, too. Just courtrooms are not good. So, I know why I didn't get selected. That's right. I did not get selected. I was down to the last 18 people. They choose 12. And I know the question that got me ousted. And I didn't do it on purpose. I did not do it on purpose. I could tell that the defense attorney was like, okay, thank you, Mr. Zender. You're off. They were talking about if there were 9 things that the prosecution had to prove. Oh, 10 things. If there are 10 things that the prosecution has to prove against my client, but they only got 9. Would you convict? And she went around the room again, and I'm thinking, isn't that reasonable doubt? So I asked a question. I said, well, that would fall into reasonable doubt. You can't have 10 out of 10. You can't have a perfect score here. And I'm thinking, yes, that would be enough to convict. She was aghast, really, didn't like that answer. There was a guy that went to school in my row. He was a college kid. And she used the example of the curve, grading on the curve. Okay, I was lost. So she went on about grading on the curve. Well, you know when you grade on the curve, if you miss one, you get a 90%, but if they go down by, and once she starts doing this thing with numbers, I am totally lost. I can't put numbers together. I can't do math. I make sense for a living, but I can't chase numbers around and understand her. I just didn't get it at all. And then she was saying, well, it's different with a civil case and a criminal case. We had a criminal case. And I said, well, why? I didn't realize there was a difference. What's the difference? Well, the difference is in a civil case, you're talking about money. And so 9 things out of 10 would be enough to convict. But in a criminal case, it's not enough. And I didn't understand why. Why wouldn't it be? And I know the stakes are higher for the defendant, but reasonable doubt is reasonable doubt. It all came back to that, the example of grading on the curve, which I did not understand. So I was totally lost on this. And I just said, so after explaining everything to you, Mr. Zender, would you still convict if 90%? I said, yeah. Thank you, Mr. Zender. I think that did it for me. Oh, so relieved. We're outside the courtroom and they started naming the names. If you hear your name, line up against the wall. It's like a firing squad. To me, it was like a firing squad. I didn't want to go back. I mean, I would have done it. It's my duty. But that place was so cold. The courtroom was freezing. I'm shivering in there. It was insane. And it was going to be a 3 to 4 day case. See, that was the thing. It was going to be a 3 to 4 day case. And I'm thinking, I'm going to come in here with long underwear and a cap. Seriously, I couldn't handle it. So I think that question got me tossed out of the pool. Zender, get out of the pool. There was one more little thing, and it was, if you had the testimony of a policeman versus the testimony of a citizen, bystander, witness, would you be more apt to believe the testimony of the policeman rather than the bystander witness? And she was leading people to say, no, it's all equal testimony. And it came to me again. I wasn't trying to be a troublemaker, honestly. I just said that I would lean toward, if everything else is even, I would lean toward the policeman. Why would you do that, Mr. Zender? Well, because he's trained. The policeman, he or she, they're trained. They have ears like cats. That's what I said. Ears and eyes like cats. And they see more. They are trained to pay attention more. But do you agree that a policeman can make a mistake? Yes, of course a policeman can make a mistake. And then she brings up the example of a doctor in a medical case. So she's going all around. She's going around the jury, the potential jurors. And she said, well, what if there is, it's not a medical case. It's just a case. And the doctor is testifying along with a citizen who's not a doctor. And most people said, I agreed. I said, it doesn't make any difference because it's not in the specialty. You might think that's a strange answer from me, because would I trust a priest or a pastor to give good information about God? No, I wouldn't. So you might think that's a little bit inconsistent, but I think it's different in the God world. But in this world, I would tend to give weight to the policeman. And I have a feeling that that's not what she wanted to hear, because I have a feeling that there's police testimony that is damning for the defendant. I just have a feeling. I don't know that, but she was constantly talking to people who had had who had family in the police department, who had any kind of contact with law enforcement, who had been arrested themselves, and she was very, very careful to make sure that nobody would give any weight to the policeman just because of that uniform. I said, it's not the uniform, it's the eyes like a cat, the ears like a cat. So they got down to the last people, and my name was not announced. So happy. I felt liberated. Oh, and this. We were on a break, and we were outside the room. And at that time, there were still like maybe 25 of us. And people were starting to joke around. It was later in the day. Not me. There's nothing funny about any of this. I didn't crack a smile the whole time, except when I was talking to the kid. And the whole thing is just, I don't know. Some lady said, "Well, I can't come back here." Somebody said, "Why not?" "Well, my divorce is finalized next week." Everybody laughed. Because she was happy. She goes, "Woo, my divorce is finalized next week. Woo." And it made me sick. I looked out the window. Everybody, there must be something wrong with me. I just can't. I don't belong to the herd. I don't know. Never have. Never will. I'm looking out the window just devastated that people are celebrating divorce. It's one of the most evil things. And the last time I was in a courtroom concerned that topic, and it was just horrible to me. Divorce is an evil. I hate it. So anyway, it was a rough day, but I did testify to the absolute and the relative perspective. I did realize without a doubt that evangelism must be loud. I always tell the speakers at a conference when there's no microphone, talk to the people in back. The people in back, though, that's your focus. If they can't hear you, you're in trouble. You must be heard. Faith comes by hearing. By hearing. Why is everybody afraid to talk? I'll never forget my sixth grade teacher, Mrs. Stith. Whenever she asked a question, the kids would always answer with a question. Like, what is the capital of Ohio?
Cincinnati.
She said, don't answer with a question. Answer with confidence. Even if you think it's wrong, answer with confidence. Now, what is the capital of Ohio?
Cincinnati.
No, it's Columbus. But the principle and the point was, be heard, be vocal, be bold. We're missing that today. Even when you're standing in line, trying to get fast food, nobody articulates and nobody projects, especially not with a mask. What? And then when you say what, they don't adjust the volume. They just do the same thing over again. Like I'm gonna get it any better the second time. What? All right, let's talk about the Apostle Paul. Oh, I will tell you this. Everybody was nice at the courthouse. I really changed my opinion of the justice. No, I haven't really changed my opinion of it, but I realize that my judgment of it has been too harsh. I've just been like, oh, those are terrible people. It's a terrible system. It is a terrible system, but there's people in there that are really nice, and everybody was very nice to us. This was a very cool thing. Whenever the judge needed a break, when he needed to talk to the attorneys, they would send the jurors out of the room. So the potential jurors, the pool. So we would leave. At any time we would come in, everybody would be standing. The judge, the attorneys, the cops, and they'd wait for us to file in. That was pretty awesome. I felt pretty good about that. Woo! They're standing like, you know, bam, 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 da, 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 da. Oh, and this. Why are there armed policemen in the place? They're dressed like a SWAT team. All they do is, there's two of them by the door. There's the bailiff. She's part of the Broward County Sheriff's Department. But then there's two policemen. It looks like they just got back from combat in Afghanistan. And they're sitting on either side of the door. Full military gear. It's like they just got back from Afghanistan and didn't bother to change. Talk about a waste of the taxpayers' money. It's overkill. What are we going to do? I mean, they strip searched us when we came in. We don't have any metal on us, no bombs here, no weapons, and yet they have these two husky war veterans just in full combat gear. Everything but the helmets. So what the heck's going on here? It's just scary. It's kind of scary, but I'm less scared of it now. I'm less intimidated now than I was. And this is a good thing because I was overly against it, you know. I was just overly paranoid with no reason to be paranoid. I just figure I'm going to go in there and I'm not going to get out. I mean, you don't even have to do anything wrong in this world to get put away. And that scares me. James Flanders, our friend who's in jail, tells me so many cases where people are in prison and they didn't do anything. They're innocent. That's a nightmare to me. So, but the people are very nice, very respectful. And so I have to give it to the Broward County Courthouse. Got to give it to them. Now, the Apostle Paul was in prison at the end of his life. And you think that must be a terrible thing. When Paul was on trial in Caesarea, and he was there with Agrippa and Festus, and Paul gives a great defense, and the Jews are there against him. They're the prosecution, and this man's terrible. He causes havoc wherever he goes. He's a riot maker. And they hear Paul's case. Paul is very eloquent. He actually tells a joke. So sophisticated, Paul's humor. So sophisticated. I'll put the verse down here. But it's when Agrippa, big shot, king, Paul's defense is so eloquent that he said, in a very short time, you're going to convince me to be a Christian. Well, Paul's answer was, I believe Paul's answer brought down the house, and I think that it helped him in his acquittal. Well, you appeal to Rome. I'm going to get to that. So, much more of this, Paul. You're going to convince me to be a Christian. Paul said, I wish everybody was like me. Well, except for these chains. Ha! That was a great line. If you like that, folks, I'll be here all week. I wish everybody was like me. Well, except for the chains. I think everybody left. Agrippa, his wife, Festus, his wife, the bailiffs, the cops, everybody loved Paul at that point. You got to throw a little humor into this, folks. This is what I told that young man who was reading A Brave New World. I told him, you know, I am the world's most outspoken Bible scholar, but I'm funny. I am funny. You watch my stuff. You read my books. I'm funny. He lit up. He liked that idea. I'm going to check out your stuff. Check it out. So they would have released Paul, but you think Paul wanted to be released? Are you kidding? The Jews were bloodthirsty. They were after him. He would have left that courtroom there, and they would have hounded him. They were like gnats. They just hounded him, just always irritating him. Always trying to get him on false charges. And not only that, but we read when Paul's listing his trials, he's in danger everywhere. In danger in the city, in danger in the country, and just in danger on the sea, everywhere. So he appeals to Rome, and King Agrippa said, this guy would have been let go if he had not appealed to Rome. Why did Paul appeal to Rome? It was strategic. When he goes to Rome, he gets greeted by the saints. So he's got a first-class welcome. The saints follow him on the Appian Way. And for the first couple years, Paul is at house arrest. He has his own private quarters. It's the most relaxing time in the guy's life. He was safer than he had ever been in his life. He received guests in the prison. And he's heralding. And when he writes to the Philippians, he said, those of Caesar's household greet you. What? Those of Caesar's household? Yeah. Paul converted some of Caesar's household. Probably converted the jailer that was with him. This guy was smooth, and you could hear him. People didn't have to go, huh? When Paul was in prison, when Paul was on trial, and he said, I wish everybody was like me. Well, except for these chains. Nobody said, what? What did he say? What? 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 Let us evangelists be vocal. Let us project. Faith comes by hearing, not by what that guy said. So Paul goes to Rome, and he can receive friends. He's probably joking with the guy guarding him. The guy guarding him is probably a believer. We'll probably see him in the snatching away. Who are you? I'm Paul's guard in Rome. Who are you? I'm Caesar's daughter. What? Yeah. Unbelievable. This Paul guy. Great. It was the most relaxing time of his life, in his professional working life. The Paul days. Yes, true. The last part of his imprisonment wasn't that great. He got his head cut off. That's true. But it's not a bad way to go. Not a bad way to go. And I'm convinced that God sows in mercy with every hard thing. I know all these guys were killed for their faith, and probably some ways less pleasant than others. But if you look at Stephen at the stoning pit, he is enraptured. He sees a vision of Christ standing at the right hand of God, and he's in a rapture. He's rhapsodizing about Christ standing at the right hand of God while the stones are coming down. So the guy dies completely peaceful about it. So I think that when that time comes for any of us to you know, die, we're not going to, though, we're going to be snatched away. Or if for some crazy reason any of us happen to die for our faith, not sure how that would happen, but it can happen. It can happen. God's going to sow a mercy into it. God's going to say, all right, not only are you scoring big points at the dais, but I'm going to make it not as bad as you think. Don't try to imagine it now, because it's not time yet. If that happens to you, I will sow in the mercy when you need it. And you won't be able to tell anybody about it because you'll be dead. So you won't be able to say, hey, it wasn't that bad. You know, we feel, oh, Paul, terrible. You got your head cut off. And then we see him in the snatching away, and Paul goes, it wasn't that bad. But spending a day at the Broward County Courthouse with all air conditioning and no fans, that's bad.